I would like to tell you a story. Knife Talk is sponsored by Evenheat, the manufacturers of the finest knife treat ovens available. Find your next heat treat oven at evenheat-kiln.com.
Welcome to Knife Talk, another episode hosted by Jeff Fader of Fader Knives.
Hi.
Myself.
We always screw this
myself,
up. Always screw this up. Unbelievable.
Every time. Every single time. Myself, Craig Lockwood of Chop Knives, and Mareko Malmasi of Malmasi Fire Arts. Three knife makers, all here to bring you a weekly podcast, which you're listening to. It's in your ears.
Hola. How's I don't know about you guys, but it's been an interesting week for me. But I'm interested in hearing what you guys have been up to. Craig, what have you been up to, man?
Just grinding away, getting knives out.
Getting a lot of good shop time?
A lot of good time this week. Yeah, I've been quite pleased. I've been working on a video as well for YouTube, which is about corrosion, testing different steels for corrosion and so on.
I have a question about that later.
Yeah, sure. It's turned into a three-day event, this thing, because the results are not what I expected, so I'm pushing it further each day, and I'm leaving it another 24 hours. But it's been quite interesting to see the results, because that'll be out on Monday, so that's okay. By the time people hear this podcast. What about yourself?
Regarding the corrosion testing, are you experiencing that it's actually not corroding as much as you would have expected?
Yes. And I think I know why, because they've been sort of submerged in the liquids and purees.
That's
but they're not
say.
Reacting to the oxygens. So they've been taken out today. So I could add that to the video as well. And
Immediately,
as soon as they've been taken out, within 10 minutes, they're really starting to rust.
After we talked about it last week, that was one of my first thoughts, was the concern that there wasn't enough oxygen exposure to whatever you were putting on the blades.
Yeah,
but I'm really interested in seeing how these turn out. Yeah,
and it's surprised. The results are quite surprising, actually, of what has sort of corroded the most, with regards to the food stuff that I've used, and with regards to the actual steels themselves as well. But I'll leave that out. The video is up, so people can go and take a look at the video.
Nice. I'm gonna watch it right after the show.
I was just saying the pictures are very dramatic. So I saw the cups with all the pieces of steel in it, and it looks like you've really taken a very scientific approach. It looks very dramatic.
Yeah. Well, it took a day just to get everything ready. So I had to cut all the steel. They've all been heat treated up to the sort of manufacturer specs as well. They've all been ground to a 400 grit finish. It was a lot of prep work involved, but I think it'll be worth it. I think it'll be worth it.
Super cool.
Mareko, what have you been up to?
Yeah, so myself, I've been, just working away on this knife. I've posted up some pictures, actually. It's that kind of, it's the briar patch mosaic that has the weaving pattern. And I posted up some pictures of it after some coffee treatment. It was looking really good, but after I took that video and upon closer inspection, there were some parts about it that I wasn't super stoked about. So I've been going in and cleaning it back off and putting it back through the coffee treatment and everything. And I've done it. Probably close to a dozen times now, which is hilarious because I'm watching everybody after we posted it up getting great results. And now I'm the one that's struggling with getting consistent good results. And I think part of the issue is that I'm taking it to too high of a polish. It's just too high of a polish. And it's not getting enough of a tooth, not a super rough surface, but enough where the oxides want to kind of bond with the steel better. And I'm not getting that. And so I've basically have spent the last week between that and another chef's knife whose saya I'm making. It's like a buckeye burl saya. It's been stabilized, but there are some tricks to that because it's burl. It feels really sturdy because it's been stabilized, but just to be safe, I'm going to do an underlayment of G10, just some thin G10, just to help support that material a bit more. Because the last thing I need is, to spend 2-3 days making this Saya, and then customer get it and it just crumbles on them because it's burl, and the grain's going all over the place. If it was straight grain, it'd be a totally different story. Even if it was curly, it'd be a completely different story, but because it's burl and the grain literally is just going all directions, you kind of need that extra support. And that's a tip I picked up from my buddy Tom Buckner, Buckner Knives. But so struggling a little bit, but hopefully getting some better progress this coming week.
I've got a question about the sires. So yeah. Do you leave any sort of drain hole at all in case any moisture does get in that it can drain back out or not?
Yeah, I mean, hopefully not that much moisture is getting in there.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
I have done that little pass-through hole out at the tip if somebody is requesting that. And the idea is that it's like a little – I call it the snorkel. Basically, it allows for a little extra breathing for some air to get into the side in case there is any trapped moisture or excess moisture. So it has an opportunity to kind of flow out. But a lot of things that people, most people don't, especially with carbon steel knife, don't really take into consideration is that you really shouldn't. You should be using the sheaths and sayas kind of more for transportation rather than long-term storage. So if it's a collector piece, you don't want to keep it in the sheath, whether it's a leather or wooden sheath. You don't want to keep it in there because if for some reason some moisture has gotten in there, it's going to do some bad stuff to the blade. But even if it's like I'm coming from my house to the workshop or something, if I put it in the sheath for transportation, that's great. I think if it's going to be staying in the sheath for longer than, you know, 3, 5, 7 days or something like that, you want to store it outside. You want to put it in a safe place that it's going to be able to store outside of that because it's not optimal to keep the blade inside the sheath. Again, it's mostly for transportation purposes. And I'd hate to see people using sheaths and be really excited about their leather or wooden saya and then all of a sudden pull their blade out and it's all covered in shit, patina, rust, other unnecessary and unwanted corrosion. So
that's an awesome tip. Gotcha. That's an awesome point. I never even thought that that would be something you would say to someone.
I've seen people do it with Kydex. They put when they put it in the press, they'll put like a matchstick in the tip, so it leaves that little hole for the Kydex. Right. But yeah, I was just wondering how you did it with a Sayer. That's cool.
Wow.
Yeah.
So what about yourself,
it
Jeff?
It sucked.
Busy week.
This week sucked. How you like that? I had nothing but problems that were out of my control. For the second time in a month, our credit card, the business card, got hacked. And I had to deal with going to the branch of my bank, which is I might as well have gone to the playground because those guys at the bank are morons. And it was really like, if you like small talk, go to the bank. Because that's what they do. Oh, it's all small talk bullshit. And so I dealt with that. That was a huge – I mean, I thought they were going to give me a new card. It turned into such a production, and it was like my brain was about to fall out. And then I had some difficulties with some companies that I'm working with. Their PR departments are not as, you know – this is the problem with when you do your own shit. When you do your own stuff all the time and you depend on yourself, when you have to kind of depend on other people, you are oftentimes let down by their lack of, brains or whatever. So that was that. And then I was about to deliver – I was about to have a customer pick up a knife on Saturday. It's Sunday now. And on Friday, I noticed that there was something in the handle that I didn't like. And what happens is if there's something I don't like, I look at it and I put it down. And if I look at it again, I put it down. And the third time, I pick it up, I stick it on the bandsaw, and then I cut the thing off to the point where I can't look at it anymore. So there's no question. It's like you just cut it off. So I had to call the customer and say, don't come tomorrow. I'm redoing your handle. I don't like something about it. I just can't let it leave the shop. And that was really disappointing. But the funny part, not funny, but I ended up re-putting that handle together, and I got this G10 that I didn't realize had both sides had different textures, and I was putting together a new set, and then that new set looked weird. Like, they're all of a sudden I was not putting them on the, one side had a different texture than the other, so when I slapped them all together, it looked weird, so then I had to do a third set. So
Oh boy.
I was it was disappointing. It was a disappointing and stressful week. However, it all came to the very positive end yesterday, and I'll talk about that later.
Oh, yeah, I saw some pics on Instagram of what you were up to yesterday, so it'll be good to talk about that later. Yeah.
Yes, very good.
Yeah.
Very good.
And talking about Instagram, I was watching a live feed of a chef that I follow this week, and guess who popped up in the feed? Mareko Marmasi.
Wow, who is that?
What are you talking
Graham,
about?
The guy that was on Final Table.
Oh, right, yeah.
And Mareko just popped up, and I was like, I know that guy. I know that guy.
Awesome. Was he holding the knife on the right side?
No, no. He was driving, actually. Yeah. Fortunately, he found a safe spot to pull over. It's fucking crazy. But he was driving down the highway, reading his comments as he's driving, and finally he pulled over and found a good spot. And he couldn't figure out how to make the how to pull somebody into the conversation to do the two people in the live stream. And so I was like, well, fuck it, I'll jump in there. And so I jumped in, and you know, I've only know him from watching The Final Table. He's a chef from Scotland, and he's very talented. Him and his partner did a great job on the show competing. Final Table's on Netflix if you want to go check it out. And so I just talked to him about the competition and stuff, and how he enjoyed it and what's changed. But my Wi-Fi started taking a crap, and so I had to just call it short and say, all right, well, I'm going to let you go because my Wi-Fi sucks, basically. But what was cool is after the conversation, he messaged me. Or I messaged him following up like the next day just saying, hey, you know, it was really great chatting with you. I really appreciate you letting me have a couple moments with you. And he's like, oh, yeah, it was great. And then he shot me a message back about 5 minutes later. He's like, holy shit, I didn't realize you were on Forged in Fire. I fucking love that program. and then he and I have just been chatting ever since. And so, yeah. Pretty neat.
Very cool.
It's neat making those random connections. It's crazy how social media creates that opportunity for access in that way. And especially if somebody, you pop into their live stream and they don't have like more than 20 people in there, that's an opportunity to kind of try to create that kind of connection. And it's not for anything like shiesty or anything. It's just meeting people, but in a digital platform, I guess.
He's a funny guy too. He's a crazy Scot.
He's hilarious.
Yeah.
I get very sometimes I don't. I'm not. Some people I have a hard time when people come in and then they're in their underwear or something like that, or there is a strange strange connection, I get weird people wanting to talk to me. Well, I pretend I don't see it.
Yeah, I do the same thing when I do live streams.
Do you guys remember Chat Roulette?
No, what's that?
Yes.
It was this. It was in a browser.
Showing your age again.
Yeah.
Yeah, what's
so
that?
So it was basically like you'd be doing a live stream and it would just be completely random, like roulette. Just somebody would just pop up and you're expected to just have a conversation or whatever. But I saw too many penises to ever use that thing again. It was incredible.
I think you should isolate that part and keep that in the bumpers. That should be one of your jingles. Seeing too many penises.
Too many penises. Yeah, but that was a very strange thing that was.
My buddies Rick Barter and Jesse Savage do a podcast called Blacksmith's Pub. I mentioned it before, and they went once Skyping with one of their guests, and they took a screenshot, and the guy was in his bed wearing a bathrobe. And they interviewed him, watching him with a bathrobe on. Oh, and they didn't show the picture. They sent it to me. And Jesse was just like, this is what we're doing. So this guy, this blacksmith, was in his bathrobe on the bed and having this conversation with Rick. That was very funny. So, yeah, I'm against it. I'll talk to you guys, but that's about it.
As long as you're wearing pants, we're all good.
Well,
all
it good. Helps. It helps.
It does. So let's bring up one of our sponsors, AMK or AMKTactical.com. They sell grinders. They sell all sorts of equipment for knife makers. I'm sure most of you already know who they are. They're AM Concepts on Instagram. Concept was with the K. They've got 10% off for all their listeners if you use the promo code AMK10. They make amazing stuff, amazing grinders. Mareko uses one. Friend of the show, Neil Kamamura, uses one. They're great. So go and take a look. 10% off anything that you order. As well as grinders, they also do things like contact wheels. And I only hear good things about them. So go and have a look at amktactical.com and remember to use the promo code AMK10.
It's a hell of a deal.
Well, we're going to try something new this week. We're going to swap out one of our segments for a new segment. This is something that we figured this happens a lot. We've talked about it before. A lot of times people want to give you suggestions. Unsolicited advice is what it usually is. It's usually started with the name started with the expression, you know what you should do. So what we decided, is to ask you what's your worst. Our listeners on Instagram, follow us on Knife Talk Podcast. You can direct message us, and it's usually, you know what you should do. That's what people say. So we ask you to sell us what your, you know what you should do is, or what your worst advice. And boy, did we get a lot of people submitting terrible advice from people, and it's very annoying. So what we're going to do is we're going to read them off, and I'll start in with, Forged in Fire champion Derek Melton reached out, and he said, I got this before Christmas. After someone asked me how much for a complete hand-forged fireplace set would that cost? And he said, the person said, do you know what you should do? You should charge less for the things you make so that you're more competitive in the market.
Oh, my God.
Needless to say, I think that Derek is a Forged in Fire champion. He's a nice guy. I'm sure he was very polite, but he wasn't so polite with me on the message. He was very irritated.
that's been one of the kind of negative sides of this show is people mistakenly thinking that it doesn't take much time to make stuff, and it does.
I got a feeling that a lot of these people, just in general, when you're dealing with knife makers and blacksmiths. People don't generally have an idea of what it takes to make things. So they assume that if you can get it cheap at like Bed Bath & Beyond, then that means it should be cheap for everybody. But they don't, you know, there's a serious, you know, I refer to most of those people as soft-handed people. These are the people in cubicles who've never really tried to do something other than like put a nail in the wall to hang a picture. You know, it's
soft-handed people like that.
Yeah. It's totally, you know, that's the thing. I shake someone's hand and I know it's like, you know, everything about them, you know, everything about them by their handshake. So, the soft handed people, they don't know how to make things. So they don't realize how difficult it is.
Right. All right. Well, I'm going to read this next one from Boot Hill Blades. He says, you know what you should do? You should make a hunting knife with a gut hook, just like a buck knife. Those sell like hotcakes. My freaking neighbor every time comes over just to buy a damn buck knife. They're only like $14.
Yeah, the gut hooks are weird. I've been asked to do a gut hook. I don't even know how somebody would sharpen a gut hook. The whole thing is like everybody's a professional all of a sudden. You know what you should do? It's so annoying. They know. Everybody knows.
I think everybody thinks they need to have an opinion on things as well. Whereas quite often, you know, nobody cares about your opinion. You don't need to have an opinion. But it's one of those things in small talk where if somebody says they do something, you've got to have some sort of opinion on it. And yeah, it's just weird. It's just weird.
I was having that same conversation with people this past week. And I actually, one of them fortunately is a friend. And I looked at him and I said, you know, you don't need to know something about everything, right? Just kind of being a jerk friend in a way. But he's always got his two cents. And I'm like, buddy, it's all right. Let's just move on.
You said that to me when I was talking about fly presses last week. Boy, did I get a fucking earache about all my fly press conversation last week. I wish you had said that to me then.
Yeah, we've had a few DMs about the fly press.
I fucked that up. I saw Jesse Savage yesterday, and he is the nicest guy in the world. He screwed his face up at me so hard when he talked about this, what I said about the fly presses. I didn't get that one right. So I know what I should do and shut the fuck up about fly presses. Don't start a fly press talk.
I've got one from Black Lab Customs, which is in a similar vein to Derek Melton's that we heard earlier. His wife said, "You know what you should do? You should charge more. You don't make enough of these." His response is, "Yeah, but if I did, no one would buy them. They're barely buying them as it is."
This whole, you know what you should do, and I said this a couple months ago, is these people, they want to feel important and in your decision making. They want you to, they're hoping that you're going to say, "You know what? If I didn't speak to this guy, my life would have been better." They want a piece of your success. They want a piece of thank God he told me I know what I should do, because now all of a sudden everything's good. You know, they want a piece of it. And it's just like, it's unsolicited advice.
Hmm. Yeah. What's that old saying? Success has many fathers. Failure is an orphan.
Whoa.
Nobody wants that deep right there. Nobody wants to take credit if you like completely blow it. But if you have anything, any glimmer of success in any way, you would be like, "Oh, well, you know, I told him that, right? Yeah, I told him he should do that." Yeah, that's something I've dealt with a lot in my career so far.
It's awful. It's
challenging.
So this next one comes from a friend of ours from India. His name is Hupman Pendis, and he says, "You know what you should do? Get an MBA." And then when I asked him if they knew what an MBA meant, he responds with, "I meant you should do something worthwhile." So the guy said, guy gives him advice, "You should get an MBA." They didn't even know what an MBA is. I love that. Everybody wants to think they know. All of a sudden, everybody thinks they're so wise. It's so stupid.
This next one is from Josh Scott Knives. He says, "You know what you should do? Get a haircut and get a real job."
Yes.
I should get a haircut and keep my job. Worst haircuts around is me. I get terrible haircuts.
I've got one from our undisputed champ, Mike DePell. You know what you should do? People ask me, "Can you ask Alex Steele a question for me?" His response is, "He hasn't responded to any of my DMs. Just go away. I'm not a carrier pigeon." I feel for Mike because... I had a similar message this week. Somebody asking me if I'd ask Alex Steele a question as well. I won't mention names, Jeff.
I had somebody do that too.
And you know what? I was the one who tried to ask for ref. I tried to DM Alex Steele, and he didn't respond either. So I'm not your carrier pigeon. I even can't get it either. So you're right. That was me.
I did message Alec. I did message Alec, and he did respond, but he simply couldn't think of anything to say. He said, I don't know any bad advice I've had. He didn't know. So we officially had a response from Alec. Well.
Oh, he did? Oh, good. Because I looked like a real penis on that one. Well, I didn't look like that. That's fine. The next one is from our boy Chris Zepp at Make Everything Shop. He said, "You know what you should..." Somebody said to him, "You know what you should do? Figure out how to make handmade folding knives from scratch for under $100. That way you can compete with the big companies." The irony of ironies, when I posted up the first day of this whole, "You know what you should do," I went to Home Depot to get something, and one of the cashiers saw my vest. It said Fader Knives on it, and they said, "Oh, what do you do?" I said, "I make knives." He goes, "Oh, do you make assisted knives?" And I said, "Assisted folding knives?" And I said, no, I don't do that." He goes, "You know what you should do? You should make assisted folding knives." And I thought, I can't believe it. I can't believe it was like less than 7 hours and somebody already did it to me. "You know what you should do? You should make assisted folding knives."
If you're trying to compete with commercial manufacturers, you got the wrong approach, because these commercial manufacturers are blasting stuff out like by the thousands a day.
Yeah.
There's just no way. You cannot compete on price when it comes to
but
that.
They don't
care. And we're making artisan made tools. I mean, handcrafted artisan made stuff. So we're not trying to sell at the same price point either.
But people.
It's a race to the bottom. You compete on price, it's a race straight to the bottom. Before you know it, nobody's making any money.
But people assume, when you say I'm a knife maker, they assume that you have a giant shop with a load of people. You know, I think that they really don't realize that we're just like struggling to grind shit out. Not, you know, we're not like, you know, we're not Wusthof, you know, but these people, they just assume, "Oh, you know what you should do? You should get a water jet. Oh, you know what you should do? You should get a laser engraver. I mean, it's like, it's all these crazy things. So you know what you should do? You should shut the fuck up." I mean, Nobody asked you. Nobody asked you. and it all, the other thing is like, it's not like we all didn't think about this. No one's coming up with some like brain buster. There's no like light bulb suggestions. It's not like, you know what you should do, and then all of a sudden the clouds part and the lightning bolt comes down, and you've it's always these dumb things we've already thought about. You know what you should do? You should get a dustpan and a broom. Oh, really? You don't say. You should clean my shop? Oh, okay. Thanks. That was great. So stupid.
We'll jump to J.R. Palm. He said, you should make a 12-inch angle grinder because 4.5 inches is too small. J.R., that's psycho talk right there. The 4.5 is bad enough. 12 inches of...
Shout out to the community.
Yeah, right angle grinder.
12 inches of winding fury is not what you want squirreling around in your hands. You imagine the kick on that when it starts up?
We used to use the big grinders, the 8-inch grinders, and you get one of those wheels, and it is it's terrifying. Because the first few passes, you know, with a new, especially I'm not talking about cutting disc, but a rock disc, they are like, I mean, it's like jumping like crazy, and it's terrifying, super terrifying. Yeah.
There, a buddy of mine does a lot of steel structure, like architecture and building, and he calls it a burn saw. I don't know what it's actually called, but essentially it's a portable chop saw that's handheld. So you're holding it by like in line with the blade, kind of like a chainsaw, yeah. And you're cutting metal with that thing. And it takes, you know, those standard, I think 10, 14 inch abrasive cutoff blades. And
you imagine,
I am not interested. I'll pass on that one.
I will say that
that's probably how you sharpen that gut hook.
Get up in there. Yeah, gut hook goes flying. I like that one. That's a good gut hook trick. We used to get the not the discs but the rocks. We called them rocks. They're like big wide. It's like a big, you know, like a grinding disc, but it was like the size of like a giant cup. And they were a little bit less. Yeah. They were a little bit less scary because there wasn't so much material, but I mean, at the same time, I hate the right angle grinder community. Seriously, it's not what you're.
I have one of those cups.
They're good. They're good for moving. Just, but it's not. It's not a finesse tool. I mean, this is for like.
Oh,
let's
no.
just blow. Let's. It's, no it's like way. The napalm of grinding. I mean, you're trying to like blow the whole joint up. God bless you. Yeah. God bless you, right angle grinder community. I ain't happy about it. So.
We've got another message. This one was an audio message, and this is from Will, buddy of the show, Will Stelter.
As far as the, sorry, I'm getting used to these voice message things. As far as the worst knife making advice goes, someone, I don't know who was running the page earlier, hopped onto my live stream and asked me this question. It definitely had to be, I was at a local blacksmithing convention and I had brought some knives, and they're like, "Oh, you got to go talk to this guy." So I went over and talked to this guy, and I was like, "So I hear you make knives." He goes, "No, I don't make knives anymore. It's no good way to make money. You can't make money as a knife maker. You should just give it up." So I think probably someone encouraged me to give it up because it's impossible to make money as a knife maker, which is definitely not true. Is the worst advice that I've been given.
Shout out to Will Stelter. That was I hate, you know, I tell you what, anybody who ever tells you that it's no way to make money, it's no way that they didn't make money. I think that, you know, it's always, yeah. I always think of like, oh, yeah, you sell knives, you're never going to make any money. It's them telling you, well, I can't do it. So that means if I think I can't do it, I think you can't do it either. And that's a flaw, huge flaw.
I was listening to, Will was mentioning that he was on a live stream when I asked him the question. And he went into a bit more detail. So he was saying that the friend who was giving him this advice, he said, was making awful, awful knives. And I think that's why this guy couldn't make a living out of it. And as you said, if I can't, you can't either.
Well, there's ego involved. There's people. Hmm. There people want to think that they gave it their best shot, and their best shot. If they gave it their best shot, that means that your best shot isn't as good as their best shot. And it's like, you know, everybody's different. You got to set yourself apart. And you have to like have real strong feelings about it. And ultimately, it isn't about your legacy. It's about, you know, what you're doing, how you're making it happen, and finding your own happiness and trying to, you know, everyone's not going to be Bob Kramer. But at the same time, that doesn't mean you can't get, you know, you can't You shouldn't go for it. I hate it when people tell you what you shouldn't do. That's just like, that gets me really down when somebody says, oh, don't do that. It's a terrible idea. I say it for artists because I make them joke. I think it's, I try to joke around a little bit about it. But like, I cannot stand it when somebody tries to stomp on something, on your passion. It's exhausting. And ultimately it's this narcissistic cruelty.
Narcissistic cruelty. I like that. I'm going to be using that one later today.
All right, there you go. All right, now, all right. So the next one comes from our buddy Ed Jitz. Ed Jitz says, somebody said to him, you know what you should do? I get so many motherfuckers telling me that I should make some of these godforsaken cleavers that look like that Serbian fuck on that goddamn Cooking on a Rock video on Instagram and Facebook. You know, we talked about that guy before. You know, he cooks on a rock. Yeah. And he makes it, they speed it up so the chopping noise is very ASMR, you know, that the noise is very nice, and he makes like awful hamburgers on rocks and stuff. They want him to make that. You know about that guy? About that guy, right?
Yeah, we mentioned him before. Yeah. Yes, yeah.
Stupid. It looks like a straightened out shovel that guy's cooking with. Everybody wants poor Ed Jitz down in Florida. Ed Jitz poor down in Florida. He wants me to make a Serbian shovel knife.
This next one is from Shipwright Skills. People tell me about all the better grinding discs and things I should use, though no one but me really knows what's happening here. Way to go, angle grinder community. Also, I've been switching... two different cup brushes back and forth without unplugging.
Yeah.
Shipwright.
I tell you what.
Danger.
I got messages. From now on, I'm unplugging the grinder to switch them out. Jesse said the same thing. Jesse said, yep. You know, I never do that. And I have two grinders. I'm going to get a third grinder and I'm never going to have to switch them out again.
It's just not worth it.
You're right. You're right.
Even if it would save you a whole day's worth of work, it's not worth permanently damaging your body in a way that you can't continue doing the work that you're doing. It's not worth
it. When you're right. You're right.
I just say that because right. A lot of people are like, well, it just takes a couple seconds. It's not that dangerous. I'm like,
that was me. That was me. Well, I did that. And a lot of people did too. And we were wrong. And you were right. You were right.
Okay.
You're right. You're 100% right. Safety first.
Safety first, kids.
Safety first.
We've got another one from Kuto CLK. I think he's in Canada rather than France,
yeah,
actually.
This is a good one.
The worst advice he ever got was when he made his first 2x72 belt grinder. He was talking to a client about the process and about the belt grinder and the build and so on. And they said, hey, man, you know what you should do? You should take a palm sander upside down, stick it in a vise, then you can grind your steel right on that.
Oh, yeah. You got those.
Can you imagine?
Maybe AMK Concepts makes those shredder palm sanding discs that they can use.
2x1 belts.
Yeah, palm sander. Nothing like, can you imagine having to grind down your knife with a palm sander?
Terrible.
Oh, my God.
Oh, jeez.
Holy mackerel.
It reminds me actually that there's an old guy who lives in my village here, and he comes in occasionally to see what I'm up to. So if I'm grinding, you're generally grinding with the bevel facing up, and he's always like, no, you're doing that wrong. You're definitely doing that. That's too dangerous. You're doing it wrong. I said, this is the way you do it, so you can see what you're doing. Everybody does it this way. He's like, no, you're definitely doing it wrong. And every time he comes in, he tells me the same thing.
Hey, Craig, you know what you should do? You should kick an old man's ass. That's what you should do. you should. You know what you should do? That's the best. You know what you should do? I've heard today. You should kick an old man's ass. Can you imagine the French newspaper's knife maker kicks an old man's ass?
You'd probably kick my ass. That's the problem.
These old French guys, you can't trust them.
He's not wrong, though.
You know what?
I do most of my finish grinding with the edge down.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
I do.
You know what? I do it too because the position. Sometimes I do it because of the position I like to hold. I hold the knife with my right hand, and I can get one side a little bit finish grinding easier with my right hand. So I'd face it down.
Hmm. Well, and there's something to the way when the belt comes into contact with the blade, and it's basically pinned between the platen and the blade. It starts binding up. And it grinds differently, edge up versus edge down. And so when I'm doing my finish grinding, I do the last few bits with the edge down. It helps me. I feel like I get much thinner geometry than I do with the edge up.
So it's pulling. You're also you're twisting it. You're twisting it a little bit too. So if you're twisting it, you're going to get a little bit more out of that end.
Yeah.
So it's pulling on the edge as opposed to pushing the edge, I suppose. Then, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Ah.
Maybe the old French dude's right.
Yeah, you know what? Maybe you should call him up and apologize for kicking his ass, for threatening to kick his ass on an international podcast. Apologize. Old man, you were right.
Okay, we got one more. You know what you should do? You should go to combatabrasives.com and get 10% off all your orders with the promo code KnifeTalk10. They're selling belts, discs, epoxy, stabilized woods. They've got everything you need as a knife maker. It's combatabrasives.com. I use them. I know Jeff and Mareko use them. Most people I know are using belts from Combat Abrasives. They're amazing.
I'm loving those belts, man.
Yeah.
That was a very slick segue right there. very nice. That was about as slick as it gets. You know what you should do?
Yeah.
Listen to Greg.
You should. CombatAbrasives.com. Use the promo code KnifeTalk10. And you know what? If you're using any of our sponsors, let us know as well. We've had quite a few this week via Instagram, people just tagging us and so on when they're getting stuff. Just let us know. It's always good to know what works for you and what doesn't.
And let the sponsors know where you found them.
Yes.
Let them know you found them from us.
It's time for the Knife Talk quiz. So this is really simple. We've got 10 questions. Somebody buzzes in with the right answer, they win a point. If they buzz in and give the wrong answer, they lose a point. Couldn't be simpler.
What about a funny answer? You get like half credit?
Ooh, no, it's got to be factually correct. Factually correct. So have you both got a buzzer? Jeff, have you got a buzzer?
Yes, here it sounds like this.
Nice.
How's that?
Nice.
All right. This is mine. Here's mine. Does that work? Or should I go for a real
No. No, that's fast. That's good. No, that's good. Was that a rhinoceros? I mean an elephant? I already lost. That's negative one.
It was a turtle. It was a turtle.
That was a negative one for me. I'm already in the back. I'm in the black. I'm in the red.
Right. Are we ready?
Rhinoceros.
First question is, and fastest finger first. First question is, which is... Oh, also, there's no arguing with the referee. These are all factually correct. I've Googled these answers. They're on the internet. They need to, you know, of course they're right. They're on the internet.
Yeah, I hope no fly press questions are in this one.
That's where all the right information is.
First question is, Coco Bolo comes from which continent? Mareko.
North America?
Yeah, well, Central America. We'll give you that one. One.
Well, it's a continent. North America is the continent.
Okay. Yeah. I'm not arguing. Coca Cola is American. Okay. 1 point to Mareko. Are you still with us, Jeff?
I am with you. I'm going to try to not make a bad. Go ahead. Or I'm still trying to figure out why that's a rhinoceros or not. Go ahead.
This one's contentious. Which has the highest carbon content? 1095 or 52100?
I'm going to say...
Jeff. That was Jeff. Jeffrey was in first.
That was Jeff.
I'm going to say 52100.
Just. So there's actually a bit of overlap between the two, because apparently 1095 needs to have between 0.9 and 1% carbon, whereas 52100 has to have between 0.95 and 1.1%. So the answer's 52100. It's one all.
Nice.
Ugh. You ready?
Go ahead.
1 inch is how many millimeters?
Oh, you son of a bitch.
Jeff was in first.
It's 25.4.
Correct.
25.4.
Two to Jeff, one to Mareko.
Shout out to MakeEverythingShop.com. Doesn't matter. You know, no one said anything about that. Shout out to Chris Zepp. You're going to get me into this thing.
Eyes down. Are we ready?
Yes.
If a batten is thicker, is a thicker version of a batonet, what is a smaller cut of a dice? Mareko.
I'm going to say it's a mince.
No. No.
Oh, really?
I suppose. I mean, that is smaller than a dice. But what's a very small dice? Is what I'm getting at.
A fine dice.
No, you lose two. You lose two. You're on minus one, Marco.
Oh, oh, the Brunois.
Brunois.
You're going for the French term. Oh. My bad.
Brunois.
Yeah.
Marco minus one. And Jeff's on two.
Yeah.
Holy mackerel.
You both know this one.
Wait. I lost my buzzer app. Okay, go ahead.
You both know this one.
All right, I'm ready.
Speed. Speed is the essence. What does TPI stand for on a saw blade? Marco went first.
Teeth per inch.
Correct.
That's a good one.
Mareko's back on zero. Jeff is on two.
Woo, yeah.
Okay, this you probably won't get this one. The world's most expensive knife has a name. What is it? Five, four, three, two.
I mean, is it the King Tut dagger?
It's the Gem of the Orient knife, which recently sold for over $2 million.
Why would I know? How would anybody? Why would anybody want to know that?
It was in the news.
I was going to just say like a bar of gold. I have no idea. All right, come, let's keep going.
It was in the news. 153 emeralds and 5 diamonds, apparently.
Right.
Okay.
You should know. What you should do. You should make a cheaper copy.
Yeah.
Make a cheaper version of it. Go ahead.
Right. Who was the first guest on episode 1 of Knife Talk? Jeff was in first.
Walter Soros.
Correct.
All right, baby.
3-0.
Nice.
3-0.
All right. I don't even look. Come on. What can I say?
Right. We've got a couple of questions left. This is another quick one. You both know this. What does VFD stand for? Mareko.
Is that me? Variable frequency drive.
Yes, yes. And not as my wife thought it was, which was very fucking dangerous.
I wouldn't have gotten it. I would have made a mistake. I don't I know the variable part. That's about it.
It's 3-1. 3-1. All to play for. There's two questions left. So the best Mareko can hope for is no, actually, if Jeff gets one wrong, he can go backwards. How much in US dollars is one of our t-shirts from knifetalk.net?
30.
Miracles in again. Straight. It's 3-2. All to play for. And we've got one question left.
All right.
Let's build some tension. We've got one left.
Well, wait a second. If I get this one wrong, is there going to be a tiebreaker?
Ooh. No, because you lose 2 points if you get it wrong. No, you lose a point. You lose a point.
Oh, Jesus. What are you making up as you go along? Come on, man. Jesus Christ.
Yes, there will be a tiebreaker. You both got your phones handy, haven't you?
Yeah. Yep.
Okay, then. So let's get this question over and done with first. Bit of tension. Build tension in the studio. Which of our listeners had a birthday this week?
Oh, shit.
Jeff.
Bill Benke.
Correct.
All right, baby. Happy birthday, Bill. This one's for you, my
birthday,
man.
Bill.
Happy birthday. Happy birthday, Bill.
4-2 to Jeff.
It's good.
It was all luck. It was all luck. It was all
look
luck.
Look at the big brains on you, Jeff.
I'm telling you, the 50-50 ones, I did well on the 50-50 ones, and then that's about it. I'm not there. This ain't.
It's all good.
Fine.
All
that good. Was fun. That was very tense.
It was tense.
Coca Bolo. Yeah. I'm like, if this is going to be more Coca Bolo questions, I am screwed.
I thought it was going to be African or something like that, Coca Bolo. But no, Central America, which is, yeah. I think we need to do more of them next week. That was fun. That was fun.
Yeah. Maybe I can write the. If I won, I should do the questions so you can.
Oh,
play.
Maybe. There you go. Okay. Okay. That's fine.
You know, I mean, unless you want, it's up to you.
As long as you put it in the show notes so we know what we're doing.
Oh, so the answers, the questions are in there?
No, keep them out.
Well, you figure it out, we'll figure it out. Well, you know, here we are.
Okay, you're the quiz master next week. You be the quiz master.
All right,
that'll be fun.
All right, 10 questions, you got it.
Craig's Community Showcase.
This is the part of the show where we give some love to our community at large, especially those that inspire us and or just who are our good buddies and who could use a little more love, especially, you know, out on the Instagrams and getting some follows and helping people do their thing better and easier. Craig, who do you got?
Mine is, to be honest, I don't think he needs the support because his books are closed, I know. But I didn't know anything about him. I stumbled up across him this week, and it's Meads Knives. Meads, M-E-A-D-E-S, Knives. And he makes these beautiful, beautiful folding knives. And they got you know, the traditional sort of shield badges as well that people inlay. He does them, and they're just stunning. So go and take a look at Meads Knives, M-E-A-D-E-S, Knives. I think he's based in South Africa, and I know there's a bit of a community there for folding knives. But it really is beautiful, beautiful work, really nice and clean. And not these, you know, not an aggressive-looking knife. They're really elegant, and they're very nice. So Meads Knives on Instagram.
Love it.
Nice.
Jeff, who you got?
Well, I'm swapping it out because I just had a great day yesterday. I want to talk about the team that I'm a member of, this awesome group of blacksmiths called The Modern Forge. It's The Modern Forge on Instagram. And I tell you what, I had an awful week, and it just turned around by hanging out and forging with the group, The Modern Forge. It's my buddies Jesse Savage, Carrie Savage, Cliff Dufton, that's CJ Dufton, John Ariane, Dave Cardilla, who's also known as Damascus Dave. And we forged out, I'm doing a project that I'm going to talk more about next week. And we had to forge out 150 bottle openers. And it was a very fast paced thing. We actually, because it was so fast paced and we didn't have a whole lot of time to do the work, Cliff designed them to be the blanks to be water jet cut out. And we all grew as a group. This is why blacksmithing is so awesome. you work as a team. You work with strikers, and it's very team oriented. And we do the Makers Fair, and we're going to do another Makers Fair this year. Plus, we're going to do something else with Jimmy DiResta at some point. And it's just one of these things that these guys are like my brothers, and we have hammer-ins with them, and it's just when you're a blacksmith and you're working with other blacksmiths and you're working as a team, everything's so organized, and it's like therapy for me. So when I see these guys, they are just awesome. We're going to do more things together. Every time I see them, everybody, we have a good time, lots of jokes, we eat some food, but we forge in a very, very organized manner. We're you know, strikers and teammates, and we have things to do. And doing 150, I think we forged out 130, finished 130 bottle openers yesterday. It was hard work. It was production work, but we laughed the whole day, and we had a great time. So shout out to the greatest of all time. I love these guys. I love every single one of them. Rick Barter is going to be joining us pretty soon in the group, and it was just I can't thank them enough for just, Sunset hosted this time, and we just had a blast. So The Modern Forge. Look, it's blacksmith's different than a bladesmith. A lot of times when you're doing, production work, whether it's railings or, you end up doing these kind of difficult things over and over again, these steps over and over again. And sometimes people don't like, knife making is different because you're doing one knife and then you're working on that whole thing all the time. But with blacksmithing, you can do one step, and you do all that one step, and it's very good for your mind. I feel like being with these guys make me – I learned from all of them, and they're all really great blacksmiths. They're super smart. Everything is, very organized and Modern Forge.
Nice.
Best.
Yeah. I looked at some of the pictures of what you did yesterday, and they look identical. Every single one of those bottle openers looks identical. It's great.
Well, I just told you that, we had the blanks water jet cut out there, Craig, and, it wasn't, like I said, we didn't have a whole lot of time to forge them all from scratch. So we had the blanks cut out and the holes popped, and then we were, we forged them down, and, that had a little technical, the modern part came out, but Cliff helped design the modern part. So we had a very short turnaround, so we couldn't actually forge everything from scratch. So we had a little modern assist.
Nice.
I was really hoping I could join as the Damascus guy, but you guys got Dave.
I want to learn
some more blacksmithing shit. I got nothing.
Listen. We talked about it yesterday. This was one of those things that was. This was like a business thing. This wasn't. We had a tight deadline, and it wasn't a lot of fooling around. So, this is a project that I'm going to be doing next week. I'll talk about it more next week. But it was a very, very tight turnaround, and we didn't have time to fool around at all. Like there was no other than working on those bottle openers. There wasn't a whole lot of anything else.
No, I'm sorry.
So you're coming to the next one.
Yeah, not necessarily for this project. Just in general, I was really hoping I could join, bring some Damascus stuff to the modern forging.
No, we talked about it. I know that Sunset mentioned to you he wanted to know what you needed, and we're gonna set up a time, and we're gonna have you down with us, and we talked about it yesterday. We know all about it. We know all about it. You're on your way. You just have to figure out a date.
Love it. All right. Well, this week. I want to give some love to my friend Mark Bartlett. He's a maker from Tennessee. He's on Instagram at Bartlett. That's BARTLETT _custom_knives. I think he's at around 2,500 followers, but he's really an underappreciated maker, I think. And I think part of it is because he does only do it part-time. But as a part-time maker who I think hasn't been making knives for very long, maybe 5 years, he is creating work on par with some of the top mastersmiths in the country. He just has this mind that is wrapped up in doing everything just absolutely perfectly right the first time. Which is hard to do. And, you know, I know that for a lot of folks, the approach is to make a lot of mistakes, or, you know, the joy comes from just getting in there and doing and learning as you go and making. I mean, that's how I did things for a lot of my career. And I've been fortunate also to train with some very talented people, but moreover, I just want to give Mark some love. I've been doing some kind of pseudo collaboration work with him in a way where I think Jeff, you forged out a bottle opener from some leftover material from
Bob Rankin.
I tend to have little bits and pieces of mosaic Damascus left over. That's nothing worthwhile for any chef's knives or even really like a paring knife. And most of the stuff I do, but it's enough that somebody could make small folder blades out of. So I connected with Mark. Actually, he reached out to me wanting to buy stuff. I'm like, no, dude, you don't have to buy anything. Cause I truly, really admire his work. And I was like, look, I got these scraps hanging out. I'll forge them out into a more usable dimension for you, which takes me about all of 10 minutes. And I'll get them in the mail to you. And he's turned around and transformed them into just absolutely gorgeous folders. He did this. I think it's called a dog bone. Traditionally, a dog bone buoy is like what was it? John White used to do. Mike Quisenberry does, Tim Hancock is very famous for the dog bone buoys. But Mark made a folder style dagger, and it's just a little, you know, like a little 3.5-4-inch dagger. Folding knife, but it's beautifully executed, and so you got to go in there and check it out. His stuff is phenomenal.
Nice.
Well, next time you go see when you can, next time you come to the Hammer Inn, bring some scraps, and we'll make some bottle openers out of your scraps, and you'll have somebody home with you.
I got scraps.
All right, bring those scraps. We'll make some bottle openers, man.
Hey, man, can I ask you a question?
Hey man, can I ask you a question? Questions from our listeners. So the first one, we've already mentioned him once in the show already. It's John from Sunset Forge. Sunset Forge NJ. He says, hey man, can I ask you a question? Do you have any tips for shaping multi-material handles? For example, even when sanding two different types of wood next to each other, one responds differently to the sandpaper than the other. You can end up with weird dips and unevenness. And even more so when it's metal adjacent to a wood. And he's asking for a friend, apparently.
Yeah, right. Friend. Also, shout out to Mad Knives for having the same question.
I've had this in the past where I've used brass liners, and when I then come to sand the grind away, that the brass liners tend to go much quicker and easier than the hardened steel. So you're left with this little dip.
Mm.
So the only way I found around that really was to use something really hard and rigid to wrap your sandpaper around and make sure you always go in, that you know you're not sort of angling in any way. So everything will come down at the same rate. But I'm interested if you know whether you guys have different ways of doing that.
Jeff?
I hate that. I hate it. I when I did some spacers on some wah style handles, what I liked was using a disc sander, because one of the things is I know exactly what you're talking about. Those little brass liners can sand differently. You know, all that stuff sands on the different side. But when you're using a disc grinder, and I know I'm telling you all to use a disc grinder, but the sandpaper is actually coming. You're not holding it. You're holding it in a way that the sandpaper is. I'm just getting better results using a disc grinder to make sure it's starting out flat all day in general. But I would imagine it's also the speed of your sandpaper. Sometimes if you go too fast, it'll, you know, especially with brass, it heats that brass up too.
Mm.
But for my Corby bolts, I always do everything on the disc grinder, and then that sets the tone. So by the time I'm hand sanding those different materials, I'm just kind of like, I'm finishing up the scratch pattern. I'm not really moving a lot of material.
But you know, John doesn't have a disc grinder on a train. Did you see him the other day? He was hand sanding a knife on a train. Ridiculous.
I know. Ridiculous. John is a bad mother. John's the greatest. Ariane's the greatest. He was on a New Jersey Transit with his integral knife. He was hand sanding it on the sitting in the passenger seat. Yeah, that's right. He's John's the greatest. He's a terrifying. He's a little scary dude too. A little intimidating. I don't think any train conductor is going to say a word.
Right. My advice. I worked for Bob Kramer. That handles was like my thing. He passed it over to me after about being there for, I think, like 6 months or so. And his handles feature three Corby bolts, two Corby bolts and a mosaic pin. And they're heavily contoured. And the problem that you see, or a lot of people experience, is that because the belts, especially if you're using a slack belt to do any sculpting or even hand sanding, like you're talking about, it has a tendency to remove the wood material quicker than the metal. And the way I've found around that is to, like Craig was starting to get to or was talking about, is using a firmer backing. I'm fortunate I have a rotary platen now. So essentially that's a rubber belt that offers a little bit of give like a slack, but it's not as hard as a metal platen. But I've found that the best thing you could do is have a firm backing behind that abrasive so that it's limited as to how far you can go beyond. So it has to cut the metal at least at the same rate as the wood, because that firm backing is back there. And that's one of the things that kind of helps my work stand apart, is when a lot of people see my work, they cannot feel a transition from the integral bolster to the wood. And that's because I'm using, you can do it on a flat platen. I would advise getting maybe a scrap piece of leather or something though, to help just kind of soften it just a little bit, because that could be a little harsh on the material that you're grinding. But having a hard backer helps everything cut evenly. And I feel like it's hard to visualize, or I'm not doing a good job explaining it, until you actually see it and then it just clicks and you get it. But it really makes a big difference. And then once you've got them even, I take them up to like 200, 400. And then the last little bits are just very lightly, like Jeff was saying, cleaning things up so you're not removing too much material. But that's what makes the disc sander so great for when Jeff's doing the octagonal handles or the wall handles. It's that firm backing of the disc right behind the abrasive. So it's cutting the metal in the bolster guard as well as the wood all at the same time, instead of being able – getting that opportunity to dish out the wood. That you would experience with a slack, kind of a slack belt situation.
And also the different materials are, you know, if we're just talking just Corbys, the difference between sanding down a brass Corby and a stainless steel Corby is a different ballgame. The stainless steel Corbys, if you're, you know, basically if you're using the same knife with G10 handles or whatever, wood or whatever, the brass is going to cut a lot easier than the stainless steel. So you're having to deal with that too. I think that's exactly what you explained it perfectly, and that's probably the reason why the disc sander works so well for me, because I have that, you know, that constant firm backing behind the sandpaper.
Cool.
All right. The next one we have is from Trinity Knifeworks. He says, "Hey man, can I ask you a question? I've been using a propane forge and a 1x42 belt grinder for about 8 months. I almost have enough money saved up to buy another either a 2x72 belt grinder or a heat treat oven. I realize you're both are important, but what should be the priority? I use 80 CRV2 and 1095 mostly. Thanks, Mark. P.S. Love the show." So I would, oh man, the belt grinder or the kiln?
I'd say if he's got somewhere where he can actually send stuff out to be heat treated, maybe go for the grinder first. But if he doesn't,
yeah.
I mean, he's got a 1x42 already. Keep hold of that and get an oven. Because, yeah, I mean, nothing's more important, I suppose, than the... you know, the heat treat. Otherwise, you just got a sort of right. knife-shaped object. So, yeah, if you can get them heat treated elsewhere, you know, we can send them out. Great, go for a new grinder. If you can't, get the oven. That would be my sort of advice there.
I would say that I would go with the oven over the grinder because, you know, all of a sudden it kills the doubt on your heat treatment. It also opens you up to more different types of steel. And you're already making it happen with the 1x42. And, you know, you can make it happen that way, but you can't really make it happen as well without the heat treating oven. The other thing is when you send stuff out, some of the guys I know who send stuff out, for it to be worth it, you got to send a pile out. You can't just send one or two. Sometimes if you're trying to do this more often, it's better to send out, you know, better to do it yourself, I would say. I'd get the oven over the grinder.
I would say I would go with the grinder over the heat treating kiln. And I think because of what Craig was saying, because you can send it out and it is a little bit more expensive if you're only doing small batches, maybe, you know, anywhere from basically anything less than 20. But the cost difference overall isn't going to complete. It's like a few bucks. It's not going to break the bank. But the versatility that you have with a larger grinder, especially a 2x72, just the amount of room you have to play with, especially between like the top and bottom wheel on your platen, you know, you pull that flat platen out and then you have all this great space to work with for contouring and shaping handles. You can also create, there are a lot more belts available for 2x72. So if you want to start experimenting with doing Scotch-Brite finishes or cork belts or just getting, you know, get going all the way up to like 6,000 grit belts, you can do that. Also, being able to design and or kind of create your own tooling to suit your use, I think is a great plus as well. So I think there's just a lot more flexibility that you can achieve with a 1x72 that could be holding you back with your 1x42 because you're limited by your abrasives or what kind of tooling is available. You can only kind of make a kind of certain kind of knife, or size knife or style knife, but with a 2x72, that opens you up to a whole new world. You can make anything from little bird and trout, gutting knives and stuff to all the way up to swords. So, and anything, basically anything in between.
I agree. Aha! Yes, this comes from Casper Verheijden. Casper, you know how it is. I don't know how to spell your name, but I'm with you. Hey, man, can I ask you a question? What thickness do you guys rough grind your blades to pre-heat treat?
I know we're going to have very different answers to this one. I don't do any pre-heat grinding at all with regards to the bevels. Simply because I've just had bad experiences in the past with warping and that kind of thing. And it just takes a lot of time. So I just think for the sake of, you know, the odd extra fresh belt, I do everything after heat treat. And I start with pretty, you know, pretty thin stock anyway. It's not as if I'm doing, you know, like a big hunting knife with a 6mm stock, you know. They're all sort of thin blades anyway. So I'm not finding, you know, that much extra wear to the to belts. So I do everything after heat treat now.
Six mil, you're probably
15/64ths.
Right. I was going to say, the you're probably working with like maybe 3mm.
2.3mm. 2.3mm.
2.3.
Yes.
Yeah. Wow. And thin.
That's 330 seconds. That's 330 seconds, everybody. 330 seconds. Shout out to Make Everything Shop. I, what I've been doing lately is I take a little bit of material off if I'm using an eighth inch material or 330 seconds. I usually take just a hair, a little bit off, but I like to keep, especially with stainless steel, I don't put any distal taper in because when I'm plate quenching, I don't have to worry so much as much about warping the way I do it. I take a little bit of material off and usually leave the thick, as they say, the thickness of a dime. I don't go bananas, but I do take a little bit of material off so it's not so hard after the heat treatment on the abrasives. Essentially, stainless steel is usually a little bit more of a bear. So I take a little bit. I leave a thickness of a dime, no distal taper.
What's the thickness of a dime? Is that on your sticker there? I'm just joking.
I don't have a caliper. I don't have a caliper.
It's about 50 thousandths of an inch.
50 thousandths of an inch? What's that?
It's just under a 16th. It's about 330 seconds. Or, yeah.
No, 330 seconds.
Or, wait, that's just over a 16th. My bad. Anyways, yeah, it's just under a 16th of an inch. I usually try, so for me, I try to heat treat around a 16th of an inch, sometimes a little under, sometimes a little over, but it depends on what I'm doing with the blade, meaning how it was treated before. If I had forged the blade, then for the most part, I do thermal cycling and everything at forged thickness, which is about a 16th to an eighth of an inch at the edge, and tapers down from the spine from about 200 thousandths. Down to out to the tip, but I do some pre-final hardening grinding, and that's when I take it down to about a 16th of an inch, and do my final hardening there, and yeah, so about a 16th of an inch for me.
Cool. We've got one from Hillside Forge, and this one's been floating around in our notes for a few weeks now.
Yeah.
If you were lost in the jungle, what style of knife would you take with you to survive? What are you doing? Getting lost in the jungle?
You're going to hate my answer. My answer is I would take a Leatherman. Mm-hmm. You're going to hate it. When I was back in the day when I was working at welding shops, I constantly needed to cut the MIG wire, and I hated having a big thing in my pocket, and I got a Leatherman Wave. I love that thing. And I always thought, I'll never forget watching old, you know, see how old I am. I watched Gilligan's Island, and they would have something like, you know, like a case of canned food would arrive, you know, float on board. And they couldn't figure out how to open the cans of like whatever. I do like a Leatherman. If I have to have any knife in my pocket, I don't carry anything, I would probably be a Leatherman. And if I was in the jungle, I'd like a Leatherman.
Cool.
You know, for stripping all that wire in the jungle, you know?
Yeah, all that MIG wire, yeah.
All that wire in the jungle.
I'd say probably something like a very similar to a Leatherman, a Swiss Army knife. Just, you know, a small pocket, Victorionics, you know, the little red things. Because, you know, you're going to want to cut your toenails and file your nails.
Jesus.
You know?
In the jungle? That's what you're worried about in the jungle?
You're going to want to pick the bugs out of your teeth.
Exactly. Oh. Exactly. Now, a little screwdriver for, you know, putting flat pack furniture together.
Yeah, when you're in the jungle, you need to put all that IKEA furniture together.
I don't know. Let's go for a Swiss Army knife.
Right. I think so. From all this, I have friends who do bushcrafting, which is essentially going out and doing practicing survival skills in the woods and stuff like that, and as well as reading articles and watching videos online. And You know, most of them only carry maybe a like a 3 or 4 inch fixed blade. Ideally, something with a paracord wrapped handle. That way, you have that cord handy for making snares or
Ready. You are ready.
Doing any baton, you could cut down a little branch, baton the end, and wrap it up and make a little spear for spear fishing. This sounds ridiculous. The problem is
Rambo. No, that's a good answer.
Well, problem is, I don't know how any of this shit. I've just I've only talked to friends. I've watched videos. I don't really know how all that works. So if anybody wants to go out, do some bushcrafting, let's make it happen. But otherwise, I'm gonna be.
I want to see you
make it in a raid style with Mareka.
I want to see you spearfishing.
Hey, I'm Islander, baby. We know how to chuck them spears.
All right, well,
it's a thing, it's what is it in the surf? There's surf fishing with the spears.
Have you done that before? Yeah.
I haven't, but I look forward to doing it in the future.
This next one comes from Jimmy Knives. Hey man, I like this question, by the way. Hey man, can I ask you a question? If you could have a mentor from one maker who inspires you, who would it be? Oof. Who would be your mentor? Who would be your mentor?
Difficult.
Anyone?
Difficult.
I have an answer, and it is going to be someone who inspires me very much because of his. I would say Nick Anger. I love that guy for a lot of reasons. One is he's figured out a way to. We've talked about separating yourselves out in the past. He's figured out a way to separate himself out as his own style, his own. The way he goes about making his knives. He's also very closer to my idea of what, he's got a more artistic mindset in the sense of he doesn't go by, he's a little bit more unorthodox on how he makes things, and he doesn't get bogged down by a lot of, details in certain circumstances. I really like his, I like his attitude. It's a little bit coarse. He's a little bit terrifying, but he's a really, really interesting guy. I'd like to spend more time with him. He gave me an invite, so maybe I will.
Craig, who do you got?
I'm still giving this some thought, I think there's a bunch of makers, and for different reasons, each of them. And in fact, I sent an email out today to some, this week, asking for advice from somebody, and that was, we always mention Toma from Florentine.
Yeah, baby.
Because I'm going to talk about this a little bit later in my notes to a young knife maker, but I've struggled finding the right audience, and Toma has done it perfectly. So his audience are restaurants and chefs, and he's killing it, So with regards to sort of business-wise, it would be Toma. With regards to, making my knives better, it's changing all the time because I'm always seeing, different work and that kind of stuff, just flowing through your feed on Instagram, for example. But, it would be wrong of me not to say you two guys to begin with.
You're very sweet.
Well, not me. Without a doubt. Hey, without a doubt. But I just, it changes all the time. It changes all the time. So I take inspiration from a lot of people, and I said that will change.
Ding.
Don't get sappy.
All right.
Captain Blackheart.
Yeah. Don't get sentimental.
If I were to, and I'm hoping to make this happen once I move back, but I would love to get some solid hang time with Nick Wheeler. And when I get back, he's only going to be an hour away from me. And so, I just hit. His approach and his style is very different from mine. Where I do basically everything by eye. He's regimented, but it's all very good because his work is so clean, and precise. And I feel like I lack that a bit, in my work. And so I would love to get time with a craftsman like that. Especially him, just because, he's the godfather.
Mareko's notes to a new knife maker.
How's it going, everybody? We're here to teach you a couple things. Well, I don't know if necessarily teach you, but just kind of offer our tips and pointers, things that have helped us. And so I'm going to kick it off, and I'm going to talk about some aspects of social media, because social media could be like a 10-part series all on its own. But I want to, a lot of people ask me, you know, what do you do that helps you, or do you find that helps you the most with your business on your social media? And I tell them stories. I tell people that the stories function in Instagram is a really, really great way to offer a kind of behind the scenes look, you know, in your approach to knife making, I guess, basically. And a lot of folks, I think, are starting to transition to a kind of, like, Jeff has a beautiful feed. He's got really nice, clean photos. And then the stories function in Instagram offers a nice behind the scene look. He does like the before and after with the handles. He gets in there and goes crazy on people in the live streams. But I think the fun part is you get to show the unpolished side, and some of that is, especially if you're a newer maker, is just your learning process. It's kind of like vlogging in a way. It's like micro vlogging, and especially if you save them to highlights. But I think it's a great way to kind of test the waters and not feel like you have to be super polished, because I think that's the other thing a lot of people over concern themselves about, their feed being super polished, especially when they're first starting, at least, and worrying so much about the content. What kind of photos? Does it have the right filter? Is it really actually a good photo? Is it high quality enough that it's almost like they can't do anything because they're overthinking it. And stories offers you that opportunity to not have to worry about being overly polished, to be a little bit more raw, and to be yourself a little bit more. And yeah, I've heard people share concerns about the algorithms, basically, and that stories doesn't necessarily bring much value to you, especially if you're trying to build a brand around your knife making. But in meeting with Gary Vaynerchuk's brand manager, he explained to me that it works just the same as the normal Instagram feed. Instagram's job is to try to, I guess, help curate for you the most enjoyable experience possible. And it sounds creepy, but basically they can track how much time you're spending when you scroll through pictures, if you slow down for one or just swipe right past another. It's the same thing with stories. And the more time you watch stories, the more you engage with them. They're taking in that same information so that it goes through. And when you're on your homepage, you're seeing stuff from that person. You're seeing stuff from Jeff because you've been watching his stories. You're seeing stuff from Knife Talk or Chop Knives or you know, a Modern Forge, because you've been looking at both their feed and their stories. But I think more than anything, like we were talking about, I think last week, about trying to differentiate yourself and stand out, the biggest thing that you can do for yourself is to just tell your story and invite people along the journey of you, especially as a new maker, trying to figure out how to even make knives. The pitfalls, the downsides, the upgrades in your equipment and your kit, as well, you know, your failures and successes. That's all really great stuff to help and create essentially that strong community base around you. And so that's it. That's what I got.
Well, Instagram thank stories. You for the kind words. Thank you for the kind words. I appreciate it. I think that for me, in regards to the polish, I totally 1,000% agree with everything you said. I try to keep my feed clean is because it feeds my website, because a lot of my customers don't go on Instagram. So it allows me to not have to double up on pictures all the time. But I 100% agree with everything you've said. Thank you very much. I'm with you.
Nice. You. Now, yeah. Mine's in a similar vein, really, talking about sort of social media, that kind of thing. And I'm not really trying to give advice here. If anything, I'm looking for advice myself. So it's about finding your audience. So I've been doing a bit of sort of an audit lately on my social media stuff to try and find out who's following Chop, who's interacting, who's not. And the majority of my sort of followers, if you like, are knife makers. when I first started doing the show, we got, you know, a bunch of people started following me, that kind of thing. And I just think that's all great. And, I sell quite a few knives, actually, to other knife makers. But I think my core audience really should be chefs and restaurants, because I'm making knives for the kitchen and for the table. So yeah. So that's where I'm struggling. So I'd say when you first start out, make sure you're targeting the right people, the people who are going to be buying your knives. Now, it's a bit strange to me, because obviously I do this show and, you know, it's intended to be for other knife makers. But I'm struggling to find that, to find my audience properly, the people who are buying my knives, who I'd like to be buying my knives. So I've taken a bit of a slightly different tack over the last few weeks of, you know, what I'm posting and who I'm interacting with online. I've gone back through even my followers, and, you know, lots of them were just sort of spammy stuff, and got rid of a lot of them as well. And just trying to think of things, you know, that's going to attract the potential customer, not necessarily people who do the same thing as me. So that's what I'm sort of stuck in at the moment. So, I mean, I suppose the tip is, when you're starting out, you know, find that audience and promote, not exclusively to them, but find clever ways to promote to them. And if anybody's got any other tips, you know, send them my way, because it's something that I'm struggling with at the moment. And, you know, if people can help me out as well, that would be great.
Well, I've always tried to use hashtags in a way that I'm not using the hashtags that other, you know, a lot of times you read hashtags based on what other knife makers are doing, and you're attracting other knife makers because you're using their kind of terminology of what they would do. So when I started doing hashtags, I mean, I'm talking in the beginning of Instagram, I was really trying to go as simple as possible. And I was using chef and food and knife and knives, and not dealing with like these obscure hashtags. Because a lot of times people don't really look at, you know, hashtags that are, you know, I know this one guy in this one restaurant, he does yum with like 25 views. It's like, who the hell is going to look at that? That's the dumbest thing. I mean, who's going to count all the views? It's ridiculous. So I really try to go as simple and as local as possible. New York, Hudson Valley, chef, knives, food. And a lot of times, or gift, you know, custom, the people who are looking, they might not even think to look for a knife. But if you go really, really basic, a lot of those big, you know, broader hashtags, you might find people more. I don't sell anything to knife makers. I'm glad. I really target, you know, people who are not. Most of my customers have never bought a custom knife before. So I'm like trying to use these basic things, very local things. I've said this before, but it's really changed. I mean, it's really helped me. But now I've noticed that less people are finding me through hashtags, and I got sucked into a couple algorithms for a while. But other than that, that was for me the best way to differentiate myself from just like, you know, like knife porn. I mean, any person who looks up knife porn, that's just like, I put it in a lot, but then all of a sudden one day I was just like, what kind of person's writing knife porn? Or who's looking up, who wants to look at knife porn? It's just weird, super weird. So, but I did it. I put it up.
I've got a note on my phone of various hashtags. Whenever I do a post, I can just paste them in. But it would be really nice if I know you can get various analytics from Instagram, especially with stories, that kind of thing. But it would be nice to be able to see what hashtags are working and what aren't. You know, but you can't really go that granular with it to see what's working and what isn't. So it's very hit or miss.
But you can see which ones people are looking at the most.
Yes. But not necessarily of yours, but in general.
Right.
Yes.
Right. However, with that said, I got a nasty message from one of my customers who said he was not happy with me for all the hashtags. He wrote me. He's like, I don't know why you have to put so many hashtags out there. Your work should be able to sell itself. And I was like, instead of going back and forth with him, I said, all right, I mean, I hear what you're saying. And it got to the point where I was thinking to myself, well, what is this guy? How am I supposed to be in business? I'm trying to be in business here. I'm not allowed to promote. I'm not allowed to try to make this thing happen. It was a little bit like, all right, you know,
but
calm down.
Look ugly in the feed, can't it? But I think I've cracked it this week. So it's been bugging me how sometimes Instagram lets you start a new paragraph and sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes it renders with a new paragraph. Sometimes it doesn't. The trick I found this week is when you finish a sentence, you automatically normally press space, don't you? Then you'll press return for your new paragraph. If you don't put a space after a, you know, whatever sentence or a full stop, if you don't put a space, but then you just hit return, it'll give you that line break. So you can separate your hashtags from your content. But just don't put a space before you start your hashtags. Just literally go straight to return, give yourself a line break, and then either paste them in or put whatever you want to do that way.
There you go.
I do my hashtags as the first comment on the post. So I post the thing, I go to my notes, copy all my hashtags, and then it becomes the first comment. That way it's completely separate.
Does that work?
From the caption. It does.
Ah. I'm going to do that next time. That's a good one. That was a good one. Mm. I'm going to do that next one.
Mm. And I'm sure some people are listening, they're thinking, geez, you're concentrating on hashtags a lot. But it's basically all of my marketing is done via Instagram. There's nothing on Twitter. Nothing happens on Twitter for me anyway. Facebook is very little. That sort of family and friends will go and like stuff just to be polite. It's all about Instagram. But again, if anybody thinks differently, or you know, if they found something else that works for them, let me know. That would be great.
Well, my notes to a young knife maker is going to be completely different. Completely different. And this comes from something that I've been doing a lot lately, and I've been urged to do it, and I'm doing this for my friend Jared Thatcher of Boot Hill Blades. I'm going to give you a recipe. I'm going to give you a recipe that is going to knock the socks off of anybody you know. This isn't even cooking. I don't even think it's cooking. I'm going to tell you how to make a gravlax. Gravlax is a fantastic salmon dish. I'm convinced it's not even cooking. So if you like smoked salmon, but you don't want to pay too much, you make some gravlax. It's super easy. Here's what you're going to do. You're going to do 2-to-1 brown sugar to kosher salt, like half a cup of brown sugar to half a cup of kosher salt to brown sugar, and mix it together with a little bit of black pepper, black pepper. You get a side of salmon. Check for the pin bones, which means you rub your fingers from the front to the tail, pull the pin bones out.
And that's where the Leatherman comes in.
That's right. That's exactly right. That's actually where the gut hook comes in too. You could use your gut hook. Go get your gut hook and you cut it in two. So then you can cut it in half, or you can get a long salmon, whatever. And then what you're going to do is you're going to mix that kosher salt and brown sugar together with the pepper. And then you're going to take a piece of, as they say in the UK, cling film or saran wrap. A little bit of – all right. So you put a little bit of the mix on the saran wrap. Then you put your skin side down. Then you take some more of that brown sugar, kosher salt mix, put it on top, cover the whole thing. Then you put a bunch of dill. You give it a dash or a squirt of vodka or aquavit or gin or rum or whatever the hell you like. Then you put a little bit more brown sugar mixture on top. Then you put your other piece of salmon flesh side down, so you're making like a sandwich. The rest of all your brown sugar and salt over the whole of that. Then you wrap the whole thing up tight with the plastic wrap. And then pro tip, get yourself a big Ziploc bag. Put the whole thing tight in the Ziploc bag and then put it in a container with a lot of weight, like cans of tomato sauce or cans of beans, whatever cans you have. Put it in the refrigerator and every 12 hours, flip it around. You don't keep it in the Ziploc bag. Don't take it out of the Ziploc bag. It's a disaster. So then you weigh it, flip it over, weigh it down. Flip it over, weigh it down. 3 days, take it out. Rinse off all the water and the gluck and the mud and the juice that's been coming out of it, and then dry it off, and then cut it nice and thin, and you have something that your people are going to be shocked how good it is. And now you can try your knife skills and cut nice thin slices.
Nice.
This is the perfect. It's not even cooking. This isn't cooking. I mean, this is the easiest recipe, and it's the best. It's the best, easiest. It doesn't let you down. Does not let you down.
It's bang on trend as well. Bang on the sort of Nordic food, that kind of thing is bang on trend at the moment too.
Well, it could not be any easier, and it's delicious, and it also lasts a lot longer because, like, I actually made it take you 3 days, and then you wipe it off, and then you keep it with the skin on so you can slice it easy, and I know Fell Knives did it recently, and I do it a lot. My wife loves it because, you know, in the mornings you cut a little bit and have a little, and it's cheaper than buying smoked salmon, or it's cheaper than buying in the stores. It's super easy. The consistency is exactly like the smoked salmon that you get wherever you get it. It tastes delicious on a bay alley with cream cheese. Boom, boom. There you go.
Nice.
Gravlax. That's for you, Jared. You started messaging me saying, I need that recipe. Well, there you go, Jared. So leave me alone.
Recipe of the week. It's a new spot for you, Jeff.
That's it. Well, fine. No problem. Gravlax, baby.
So that's a show. That's another show under our belt. I think that's show 53 or show 54, which is crazy.
Woo-hoo!
Crazy.
Oh, have mercy.
So
have mercy.
Thank you very much for listening. Remember to show our sponsor some love, which is Even Heat, AMK, and Combat Abrasives. Remember to use those promo codes. Remember to get your Knife Talk t-shirts at knifetalk.net. And we shall speak to you next week.